This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Hi, my name is Kristen. I'm the author of the book Five Lines of Code, and you're listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am your host, Troy Lightfoot, and with me, I have my co-host, Jay Herskow. Say hi, Jay.
Hey, hello.
Hopefully I said that right.
Yeah, you nailed it.
Okay. I've known you for, I don't know, 6 years now? I think six years. And I still don't know how to say your name exactly, so it seems like...
Troy, my college roommate, I've known him for 24 years. He still can't spell my last name. Fair enough.
I actually can spell it H-R-S-K-O, right? Okay.
Okay. Once you hit the 24-year mark, that's the hurdle you got to beat.
Okay, fair enough. All right. Well, today we are. I'm going to be really asking Jay a lot of questions because he has a lot of knowledge in this, and I would say I have some knowledge, but I'm a novice in the area for sure. But the topic of today is blockchain, agile, and how in the hell do they relate to each other? What does this have to do with our daily lives? Can we make sense of what's going on in the world with emerging technologies and blockchain and cryptography and digital currencies? And does that have anything to do with our work life? Is it all a big scam? Is there any usefulness or functionality to any of this? So that's what we're going to be talking about, and how it could impact, you know, business agility potentially, and how does it relate? So that's the topic for today. It's just who knows where we're going to go. It could go a lot of areas. So anyway, to kick it off, Jay, what the heck is blockchain?
So I think the first thing we probably should start with is the idea of what is the difference between cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. So much like every square is a rectangle, but every rectangle is not a square. Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, but not every cryptocurrency is Bitcoin, right? So that's the first thing. And underlying cryptocurrency is the concept of blockchain technology, which is really what we're getting into now. And some of the fundamental aspects of how I would describe blockchain technology, it is a decentralized technology where everything is shared publicly and using cryptographic features or functions. It makes data stored on a blockchain notoriously difficult to fake. It's almost immutable. It doesn't leave it open to manipulation. And those two things coupled with a whole bunch of other quasi-libertarian interests is where cryptocurrency really has its draw. And I think for the purview of this conversation, while we're not really going to discuss cryptocurrency, because I mean, that's a different topic in itself. If there are listeners that want to hear it, please let us know. I personally think, and you and I went down this rabbit hole over text not too long ago, the underpinning technology of cryptocurrency, like things like shared ledger and whatnot, do potentially have some ramifications for what we do. And I think if there are practitioners or organizations with an eye towards the future, while we're deep in the hype cycle, there is, you know, something that's going to come out of this. There is some interesting ideas that are being put forward.
Okay. So good answer. I'm going to back up though. What's a shared ledger, Jay?
So the concept of a shared ledger is imagine a giant Excel sheet, which is stored somewhere out on the internet. And anybody who has access to the internet can go and look at this shared ledger. Now you may need a special pair of glasses, right, to look at this ledger, which is the programming language that all of these blockchains are written in. You've heard things like Solana. I think Solana is a different blockchain. I'm sorry. Things like I know you can use Ganache to look. I think Solidity is a language that you can use to look at blockchain and interpret it. I think that's got an Ethereum backer, which I know we're going to eventually get to. But the blockchain is and shared the shared ledger is basically an Excel sheet that anybody has access to that can interrogate and can see the data contained therein. But unless they run a full transaction through a system that feeds that Excel sheet, that feeds the cells,
you
can't change it.
I see.
And that's the first part. The second part is any changes that are lodged in that Excel sheet, you can't control Z. So when Troy makes a change, when Jay makes a change, when Andy Clef makes a change, it's lodged in an Excel sheet and it basically becomes irreducible. It's permanently stored there and it would need another transaction to offset it to the debits and credits and whatnot, if you can think about that conceptually. But that record is always going to be there and it cannot be changed. And that is one of the unique, you know, we've all seen that's one of the unique aspects that really make it kind of fascinating. Because if we all remember Superman, what is it, Superman 3 or Office Space and all these, you know, financial manipulation hijinks with leftover cents and whatever, they get moved around, all these, you know, economic chicanery. That's one of the quasi-libertarian draws to this technology is the fact that it's all shared and stored out in the open. It's not stored in centralized nature. It's decentralized. So everybody's computer is running a different copy of that Excel. And that's where it kind of has a draw for that cryptocurrency set. Because it really can't be manipulated.
So if you were to try to amend one of the these virtual Excel sheets, right? The other computers on the network that have copies of this would have to verify that transaction, whether or not, because what happens is when you change one thing, it basically will rechange the hashes. Now we're getting into the details of like, maybe, I don't know how much people want us to get into the details of this, but essentially what's happening is you can't go back and change one of the blocks because the other computers on the network will invalidate the transaction.
And
so that's one of the key differences between a centralized and decentralized, in the sense of, a lot of times I hear people say, well, why do we need this technology? Because we already have banks. We already have applications with databases that store things and have ledgers, right? So what would you say the core value prop to a blockchain is? Now, I'm not even talking about cryptocurrency. I'm talking about pure blockchain technology.
The core value to the blockchain is, like you said, in order to undo something, in order to hide something, you want to talk about a determined bad actor. If you want to talk about someone who's interested in subterfuge, it is almost technologically impossible with today's current hardware subset. And the way you described it is perfect. So if you think about each block in a block in a shared ledger as a, every time there's a bunch of transactions, a new block is generated, right?
Yeah.
Genesis block being the first block. If you think of every block in a chain with a alphabetical letter, right? A, B, C, so on and so forth. If we get to Emma's and Mary and we want to make a change, we want to insert some change that would undo something that was done in the Charlie, the C block. It's near impossible because you need to basically roll all the transactions back, make a change there. Because like you said, when I make the change that represents something shady we did in the C block, all the other computers that are constantly validating this chain, which is the other thing with the shared ledger, they're constantly validating it to make sure it's accurate, would override what we're trying to do, because consensus, it's consensus driven. Five machines out of six will say, no, that doesn't make sense. That's not how it happened.
Yeah. So that's, and it's totally open, right? So that's one of the benefits of it. It's open across the world. Anybody can have their own a copy of a blockchain, and you can have the full copy on your computer. You can have like a metadata copy. You can have many different versions of it, and you know, literally millions of people, billions of people theoretically, right, could have the copy of the blockchain. And so I don't think they do, but I'm just saying theoretically you could have as many people as you want to have the copies of the blockchain. So okay, so there's a cool benefit. So it's decentralized, so it's not one entity that controls it. It's security is there when it comes to being able to change things and hack it, right? So how about this concept of, let's talk about where it's going, right? So we know that the most popular use case for it in the world has been cryptocurrency. And like I said, we're not really going to talk too much about that today, but that's what people relate it to, right? In particular, Bitcoin, most people know about that compared to all the other ones, right? But there is a technology that was developed after Bitcoin was developed, and that technology is called smart contracts. And to me, this is where we start getting into the more intricacies of blockchain and how it can really help or companies can develop their own applications based on the blockchain and based on these smart contracts. So how would you describe someone what a smart contract is and what the value prop there is?
So a smart contract is a contract that is executed automatically by a machine with no human intervention. So for example, when, you know, we've all heard of stock splits, right? We've all heard of stock splits. A company decides to split their stock, dilute the shares, et cetera, et cetera. You could have a, if you're an organization that offers tokens, which is, you know, basically a widget that's part of a blockchain, represents an ownership stake, right? It's a stock, literally. You could have a smart contract that says when it reaches a certain point, generate another token. Anybody who currently has a token on this blockchain gets another one. So increment all plus one. It takes the human out of it because, again, it's all in code. So when you think about audit, when you think about looking back to see why decisions were made, you know, most of us have talked about ADRs, which is architectural decision records. So when we make a decision, when we design a system, it's good habit to keep an ADR, throw it in Git or Subversion, wherever your source code repository is. So at least you understand why the decision was made when it was made, and it makes sense to keep those things with the code. Smart contracts is almost the same thing. It's a decision record to say, okay, at this point, do this. And that is auditable because the only way you can change and hide, again, it's the assumption that there is going to be a determined bad actor somewhere. The only way you can really hide something is you have to change the code itself that executes the contract, which is sitting and stored on a blockchain, which again is quasi immutable. So way more work than and technological effort than is currently feasible.
Right. So how about some practical use cases for this to kind of make it real for people?
Okay.
And maybe you can start envisioning like how it can impact, you know, your life or the companies that you work with potentially.
So I know that people are going to be listening to this and they're going to run out and trademark these episodes and these ideas, which is great. Yeah. So please just give Troy and I at least a couple of governance tokens when you spin up. It's only fair. So let's start with the idea of a generalized shared ledger, right? Yeah. So we talked about it. A shared ledger is open to the public. It can be interrogated via a code programming application, a programming UI. It's kind of immutable in the sense that you really can't fake it. So if you're telling me I have a giant, basically a ledger book, and in this ledger book, I have a record of transactions that cannot be faked, where does that have use in the enterprise and the corporate structures that we see today, right? Tying it to Agile, right? What about our safety protocols, right? Risk, audit, compliance, right?
Yeah.
Imagine, if you will, a command that's built inside of Git, where every time you make a commit in your code base, it writes that commit into a shared ledger, into a blockchain, right? Yep. And it has, Troy made this commit on this date at this time. Here's the code he committed. Here's what he changed, right? Pull request, what have you.
Yeah.
Every time that's done, it writes to what amounts to an audit blockchain. Okay, so now you have a full history of everything that's been done to this code. You don't have to look at tickets in service now. You don't have to look at Jira. You don't have to look at Rally. You literally have a almost etched in stone record of all the things that have happened. So now what happens for those of us that work in big enterprises when PricewaterhouseCoopers comes around the corner and they want to audit us, you give them a private key. You give them the link to the blockchain, to the shared ledger, and you basically say, have at it, hoss. I'm here if you got questions. That will be, it's quite easy to prove compliance because of the fact that it's almost nearly impossible to fake it. If someone's listening and they have an idea how to fake it, please let us know because we'd really be interested in that conversation. But that's the first thing that I think of, Troy, when I started to unpack the idea of a giant ledger that's not only shared, it's distributed, right? So you can share it all the way across the nodes of an enterprise computer network. You don't have to like stick it somewhere. And if it's behind you need a private key to unlock it, right? But you just generate that when you give it to somebody. It's a lot like sending somebody crypto. You know, there's you have to exchange keys and they're checked for validity. You store those keys in the blockchain. I give the PwC guy a USB stick, right? Or a cold storage where he comes in, plugs it in, and then he can start interrogating all the changes that we made in a particular application over a particular amount of time. Now, granted, this requires a little bit of power for generating those type of queries, generating that type of interrogation. I know like Graph, I think Graph dot something or other is a crypto product that does like interrogation for Ethereum, which is a common public blockchain. It would have to be something like that. There would need to be tools, I guess I'm saying, in order to interrogate that and create that visual. But how much easier would your audit be if you literally are handing the auditors the kitchen sink and saying, go find something wrong? You're not, because every single commit we've made is stored now. That I think is huge. I'm waiting for I've been waiting for someone to do that now, Troy, for 18 months. Nobody's done it yet.
and then you have that's a great idea, by the way. Then you have just like practical use cases that people could relate to. And you say, hey, maybe I work in this industry, or I can think about how other industries could be impacted. Anything that can be have extremely secure, right? Quasi immutable, like you said, that a lot of the transactions can be, and the rules basically of a transaction can be automated in code through these smart contracts. And so, for example, if you were to draw up an actual contract, a legal contract, right, and you have lawyers and you have people involved in making sure and checking that the contract is correct, and then when the transaction happens, you have both parties have to validate, and there's a lot of manual intervention, you know. So anything that you have a lot of manual intervention, the possibility of automating these types of things on a blockchain is there. So, for example, there's a company, I can think of off the top of my head, who is working on some insurance ideas for blockchain. There are companies who are doing real estate for blockchain, for example. So real estate transactions all done through smart contracts, right? Not needing a potentially a middleman or financial services company. There's a lot of potential use cases for it. And I know it might seem weird and alien to some people, because it did for me. Not even if I were to listen to this podcast 6 months ago, even I would have been like, okay, I don't even understand why you would use some of these things, right? I'll give you for the audience out there who might be curious about this. The current head of the SEC, his name is Gary Gensler. He taught an MIT course a few years ago, called block. It's something like blockchain and finance, and I'll link it in the description. And basically, it's a full-on MIT course all about blockchain and finance, taught by Gary Gensler, who used to be a bigwig at Goldman Sachs, I think. So a finance expert who became a blockchain expert, and in 2018 he taught this course. The whole entire course is free on YouTube. It's 20 lectures, and you can go watch all his lectures and learn all about this stuff from the current chairman of the SEC. It's a really cool opportunity. And that's, to be honest with you, that's how I learned about it. I started with this YouTube MIT course.
He's an interesting dude too. He has, I mean, not to get into politics, but he has some interesting ideas. I think the fact that he's technology forward is kind of fascinating. A lot of people who typically fall into those type of oversight roles don't have the CV that he's got, right?
Yeah.
The bona fides. However, I mean, the other side of that is he has some kind of restrictive views, I think. But back to where, you bring up a good example, right? The idea of a smart contract, right? So as we discussed, that's a contract that automatically, executes via code, does not require manual intervention. Think about when we bought a house, right? Yeah. Think about when we bought a house. What happens? Well, you go through this giant mortgage process where they validate your assets, right? They validate your assets. What if all your assets were on a blockchain? I know we're getting outside of Agile here, but here's another thing that popped into my head. Public shared ledger. Everyone's heard about the MERS, the mortgage origination, the mortgage deed recording system, right? Mm-hmm. Where every time there's a transaction, a real estate transaction, that gets recorded in a system. What if that was a publicly shared ledger that anybody with the right key can write a record to, and you have a reference to go to the record? You don't have to pay title companies all this money to research title. They can just put title companies out of business because it's all stored in an algo somewhere publicly that you can access. Yeah. But back to smart contracts, right? And how does that affect us and what we do in IT, right? The one idea that I did have, I think it was John Schneider, shout out to John, came up with this idea. Think about the IoT stuff, right? So the Internet of Things, smart, intelligent hardware, smart, intelligent utility pieces. So imagine if you or I, let's use a kind of data, let's mix it, Troy, with the data example. Imagine you and I sold Canon copiers, right?
Yeah.
And anybody can access the Canon copier, but you needed a particular contract and a service contract to get service, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you needed a service contract to buy a certain piece, right? Imagine you put all that through a smart contract, and the machine is constantly, you know, once a week querying the blockchain to see, oh, is this still have a valid contract? Oh, yes, it does. Okay, auto order ink, auto order paper, call service because it's down. Oh, we're recording an error code. Look at the blockchain. Do we have a valid sales contract? Yes, make a phone call. So there's a way to, you could even remotely turn on and off things. If that thing has a connection to the internet, we're going to interrogate the contract. Now, I haven't thought this like three steps through, right? Because how would someone fake that? Well, they'd intercept the conversation. They'd have to fake a blockchain. Like there's kind of, again, determined bad actor. But think about that, right? And how we do what we do. A lot of us do work with embedded systems. A lot of us have been around that higher, that interesting amalgamation of hardware, software, firmware. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things where I think smart contracts could really take off, right?
Okay.
I mean, theoretically, you could even do smart contracts for deployment. Imagine QA writes a smart contract, Troy, that they can't deploy the code to update our application until all these tests are passed. And the thing triggers, it interrogates the blockchain, it sees that all the tests are passed. So then it automatically deploys it into production. I think I just put all these cloud services companies out of business, but whatever. but again, these are kind of things where and that ties back to the compliance piece, because then you can prove that all the tests were executed, because the contract only executes when all the tests were executed and passed, and the record of which is stored in the, drum roll please, blockchain. So again, it's compliance, but not a bad idea.
I have a question for you then, a follow-up question, Jay. Is it a scam?
So now we're getting into the differentiation between blockchain and cryptocurrency. So a lot of people are saying cryptocurrency is a scam. I think the jury is still out. I think it is deep in the hype cycle. I think, but I also think there was a lot of liquidity sloshing around because we were all locked in our houses and the government was sending out checks to everybody. So with all that capital trying to find somewhere to be invested in, of course it went into cryptocurrency. It was the next newest thing. It's like the Wild West. I don't know if I can say definitively if it's a scam. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't think the money is going to be in the idea of a cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. I think the money is in what we're talking about, the underlying technological advancement. That's where I think the money is. If you're looking to make a quick buck, spin up a Coinbase account, dump a bunch of money into Ethereum, you know, have at it, hoss. Go, you know, I've got a Coinbase account. I've got money. I've got a little bit of money in a lot of different things, only because it'll force me to pay attention to what is developing on those things, right? Like it's kind of like a tickler, $20 here or there. I literally am not putting my 401k in Ethereum or Solana, I'll tell you that much.
Sure.
So I can see where the concept of a scam is it, but if you're not looking at the cryptocurrency piece and you're looking at the application of the learnings, right? And so in Agile, we talk about, you know, triple loop learning, feedback loops. What did you learn? What did you develop? Well, what have they learned and developed? Smart contracts were not an original intent. You know, dApps, you know, decentralized applications were not an original intent. The thing that really kind of floats my goat is decentralized autonomous organizations. That was not the intent. The intent was to create a currency that couldn't be meddled with. And the technology that fell out of it, I think, is where it's really going to be. If you're thinking along the really razor's edge, bleeding razor's edge, I think you can probably do something pretty wild.
Okay. So I have two more questions for you. You just brought up one question for me. If you could explain to the audience what a decentralized autonomous organization is, because a lot of times there's this pipe dream a little bit in the agile space, right? About decentralized autonomous organization, meaning like the teams are decentralized and they make their own decisions, right? There's kind of this whole concept of and some people, you know, this hierarchical structure doesn't exist and all these types of things, right? Now, whether that's a good idea, bad idea, if realistic or not, that's a totally different topic altogether.
Yeah.
The point is, that is a kind of popular thing that I've heard over the years, like in our space, right? Mm-hmm. So that word, decentralized autonomous organization, just sounds similar to me in a way. So maybe if you could explain a little bit of what that is.
I'm gonna do my best here. And I know it's going to be people screaming at their phones because I'm going to butcher this. Sure. The way I understand a decentralized autonomous organization is basically an organization, which if you think about corporate rules, right? Rules of order, Robert's Rules of Order, anyone that's ever done like anything in the government or even like any Greek life in college, all that stuff is executed via smart contract. It is truly meant to be, what's the word I'm looking for here? Egalitarian, in the sense that everybody is created equal. It is meant to be an organization that rules and decision-making and rules of engagement are all clear. They are out in the open. Typically, you've heard of like token voting, where the people who have, I jokingly said a governance token, that's a token mm-hmm. that allows me to have a say mm-hmm. in what this project, this DAO is doing. It's equal contribution, equal voting rights. If you contribute, you get to have a piece of the puzzle. So the best example I can think of for those of the people that aren't up to the crypto lingo is everybody heard about the Constitution DAO, right? Which was a virtual organization, a decentralized autonomous organization that spun up to buy a copy of the Constitution. And what people did is they bought tokens inside this organization, which is basically like a chit or a stock. And the thought would be if this organization had the winning bid for the Constitution, the organization would own the Constitution. Everybody with a token would own a piece of it. It's the idea of fractal ownership, which is also NFTs, and we can get into that. That's kind of wild. So that's I think my interpretation of what a DAO is. So now let me give you a real, you're right, Troy. We talk about autonomy all the time and what we coach. However, I will argue that you can't have autonomy and power without competence, which is where smart contracts adds the competence because it's all automated decision-making. However, I'll give this real life example. I have been talking about for months now, turning the Agile Uprising into a DAO. Here's my argument. Okay. DAOs are something that non-for-profits will seem to be a perfect fit for, right? Okay. Because what happens with non-profits when they typically long enough, if they're around long enough, they kind of become quasi-corrupted, right? Because you have a board of directors, you have a president, and then they kind of lose the message. There's a law, like a Gresham's law, I forget what it is. There's a law about how organizations eventually, iron law of institutions, eventually you only care about your status in the institution, not the institution itself. A couple generations removed, you start to lose the values. But imagine, let's talk about our org, the Agile Uprising. Imagine everyone who contributes to the Agile Uprising gets a token, right? Mm-hmm. Or a chit. And that token allows them to help make decisions about where this organization goes. Well, at that point, we're kind of flat in the sense that we don't have like a president, a vice president. We don't have a CEO. We have any of that stuff, right? We're not even a registered 501c3. We're just a bunch of people who hang out together. Right. But imagine if all these people who contribute to the uprising, right? The conversation on the Discord server, the podcast guests, everybody who contributes gets a piece of the pie. And then they get to say where the organization goes. Now there is a little bit of scariness there, right? When you think about what's happened in history with Greeks and Rome, and when you go to a full democracy, you know, the mob rules.
Right.
But the idea of not needing a board of directors, the idea of decision making truly done, I hate to say by the people for the people, but in that vein. I think that would work. To be honest with you, Troy, I really kind of struggle with, I can't figure out if we're gonna mint a governance token. Why would you want to be involved? And what is the end case? Like, that's where I struggle with our organization is a perfect example, right? So everybody who posts on Discord and hits the level 25 because they've been so active, right? They get a free token. Okay, that's great. So they have a piece of the pie. Well, what does that do for them? That's where I have yet to spend enough cycles to figure that out. But that's where I think the idea of decentralized autonomous organizations go. Is it in Agile? Well, it goes back to, you know, smart contract to deploy your code. Your code can't be deployed until it hits all these QA things, right? So we truly are autonomous in the sense of we're working on our own to put our code into the right environment so we can deliver value to the customer. Now, the mental exercise that I think will be like part four of this series is what happens when you try to do that at scale. So let's take that idea and expand it out to tens or even hundreds of teams. How does that conceptually work? But back to DAOs, that's where I think they really come in. It really is if you're sharing and creating the value, you deserve to be compensated for that. And you deserve to have a say in this group that you're part of, where it goes. The other application that's not Agile specific, which I consistently bounce around, and I think there is a company, decentralized social networks, where if you think about the way Facebook works, right, it's kind of a ripoff for us because we basically contribute an audience. For us, I mean, everybody who uses it, we contribute an audience. We tell Mark Zuckerberg our likes and dislikes. The Meta, what does he call his coworkers now? Meta members, me members.
I have no idea.
Something totally stupid. But if you think about it, every page we've liked, every comment we've left creates all this data that he turns around and monetizes in the form of advertising. So he's making money off our eyes, right? Quote the band incendiary, if you don't know the product is you. What if that was reversed? And what if every time we interacted with a brand, right? You like Gibson guitars, you like the band Ghost, you like, Sriracha hot sauce. Every time you interacted with them in some sort of social environment, you got a micropayment, you got a microtransaction of a little bit. You know, again, we talk about fractional ownership, a little bit of money here and there. So my data then becomes monetizable to me, not to somebody else. And companies are actually paying me for the time and the eyeballs that I give them. So think about that. I know Bitcoin SV is probably one of the products. I know I don't want to talk about crypto, but it's in that space about advancing the idea of micropayments. I know one of the concerns of doing not even micropayments, just like replacing credit cards with crypto, is the transaction volume and speed, and then the gas costs, which are the costs to record a transaction in a ledger. But that's another thing, right? Like where it's decentralized, we're making money off of what we spend our time on, because what we spend our time on is obviously what we hold important. And that then in turn feeds back into the system. I mean, that's where I think DAOs are going. I have a very yeoman's sophomoric knowledge. I know there's probably a agile crypto bro out there who just screamed at his radio because I'm butchering it. But that's where I think the idea of everyone has a piece, everyone contributes to the vision and where we're going. That's where I think in agile in organizations, I really do think there's an opportunity for that. I do.
So I think, I have one last question for you, but while you were talking, I was thinking about, and I'm not going to plug any particular companies or anything like that, specifically, but I will just say that there's a company that I'm aware of that's doing something really cool. And basically it's one of the best, at least in my head, the best use cases for some of this technology that people can relate to, right? Like he's very easily relatable. So imagine like if you could own a piece of a property. So if you only had, if you had $1,000 to invest, right, in something, right? You could invest your money in crypto, which is highly volatile, right? You can invest your money in the stock market, which is a little bit less volatile, but it's still pretty volatile, right? And so you could lose all your money, if you invest in something risky, or if you invest in something that's not risky, then you might make very, very little, return on investment. And if you get lucky, maybe you make a good amount of money, right? Or you can invest in the, highest year over year, decade over decade kind of return on investment that people can relate to, this a brick and mortar physical locations, right? Whether that's home ownership, whether that's commercial property ownership, right? You think about how much money your house or a house you somebody had. So like my parents' house, I remember when they bought that house, they paid, something like, I don't even know, $50,000 or something for it back in the day. And they ended up selling it for a few hundred thousand or something like that. Some crazy return on investment for literally just living there, like doing nothing else, right? So that's something people can relate to, right? So, but unfortunately, for a lot of people, they might not have the credit, they might not have the financial, they might not have the savings to be able to put enough money down on something, right? And they might not have a way to buy a $500,000 house or property or something like that. So, or $100,000 or whatever the case, but they might have $500 in their bank account they can invest, or $100 or $1,000. So what if they could actually own fractional ownership of a property with other people and get the return on investment of the long-term property value appreciation, right? So they can sell their fractional ownership at any time to anyone else. So if the price of that value goes up 5%, then like the price of the property goes up 5%. Like you see Zillow, for example, the Zillow ratings, you know, whether it was like a rating system like that was public, that you can say, okay, the value of this went up 5% over the last year, 10%. Okay, I can sell my fractional ownership to somebody else on like an open marketplace, and they can buy that, and then they can invest in that long-term. And meanwhile, this property could be renting out and you could be getting yields on that property. So you can be earning passive monthly income and sell your ownership of that actual brick and mortar property anytime you want. It's totally decentralized, and there's no one single owner there. Now there may be a company who's like buying the property and setting this up, you know, of course, but basically that kind of use case where you can really bring something that is traditionally for people who are considered wealthy or well off to be able to buy properties and flip them and then earn money on those flips and things like that, or rent out the properties and get the yield. It doesn't matter how much money you have, you can still participate in that. And then you can pass on that fractional ownership to your kids, right? And whatever, through your family, and make it long-term. And it's all recorded in the blockchain. It's unchangeable. It's a whole thing, right? That kind of technology, like that's something I see people can relate to, right? Again, I'm not going to promote the company because I don't want it to sound like a plug or anything for any particular company.
But that you're hitting on the idea of fractional ownership, right? Yeah. Fractional ownership that pays a return, and it is ownership in something physical, right? Yeah. Which is, you can't just... I know the topic du jour, right, is inflationary currency and the Federal Reserve just turning on the money printer, blah, 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 blah. But you can't just print a house yet. 3D printing eventually is going to take care of that. Right. But, you know, you can't just print something that's tactile. There's a company, I believe the name is Masterpiece, I believe, which does almost the same sort of thing that you're talking about with fine art. So you can own a piece of a Basquiat. Or you can own a piece of another of fine art. Again, it's a fractional ownership piece. It's going to appreciate when you know, through sale and all that sort of stuff, earning yield. But that it's kind of the same idea. And I mean, we're kind of touching on NFTs, which I don't want to go into because that's a whole friggin' episode in and of itself. But I was ruminating about how would that apply to some of the things we do in the agile space. And I think the idea of NFTs, especially as they relate to smart contracts, it's that fractional ownership plus always getting yourself a piece of the pie every time that item is transacted. And I think I'm kind of working through it. We'll talk about it in the next part, but I'm kind of working through how to do that in the agile space where monetizing things and then earning yourself, again, a passive income based upon the utilization of that thing and its consistent resale.
Right.
So here we go. Imagine if every CSM was an NFT and there's only so many minted a year. And if I want to sell my CSM, right, I don't have to pay my yearly thing to keep my license active. If Scrum Alliance says we're only going to do 500 CSMs and I have one, it's kind of like a liquor license in town. You know, you and I want to build a bar and we got to get a liquor license. Well, there's only so many liquor licenses, so they can either print one, they can either deed us a new one and we pay for it, or we have to buy somebody else's. What if somebody else decides to put that liquor license up for sale? And then it's transacted and stored in a public ledger, right? So, hey, I want to sell my SPC because I'm getting out of the agile business because, you know, okay, well, I sell it to you, Troy. Well, it's executed via smart contract. There's a record in a public ledger that I sold it to you. Safe themselves still get a piece of the action because that's one of the other things with smart contracts. And NFTs is whenever they transact, the original content creator gets a piece, a percentage. This is a win-win, right? Somebody is going to beat us to the punch. And yeah, I don't know who it's going to be, but that's where I really think there is some if you're thinking forward enough, there are some opportunities here.
Yeah. So if you're listening out there, if you're still listening, you know, God bless you, by the way, because this is I don't know. This might sound really geeky for some people, but I don't know. But we're into it, as you can tell. So it's a cool new. It's not really, the technology is not new, but there's a lot of new emerging technology from the original blockchain technology. So you know, it's pretty exciting. So if you want us to go deeper into this, if you want us to go deeper into pros and cons of these things, if you want to dive into cryptocurrency, or if you want us to dive into anything you heard about this, if you want a deeper dive, reach out on the Discord, the Agile Uprising Discord. If we see people interested, you know, maybe we'll record another one. We know it's not directly, that deep dive wouldn't necessarily be directly related to Agile. But if you're just interested in this topic and want us to go down that rabbit hole, maybe we'll find some similarities or things where it can fit. So all I got for today,
Jeff. I will second what you just said and just drop for people. If I know it's kind of like, it's like trying to explain crypto to my dad, right? It's kind of terrible. if you really are, if this wet your whistle and you want to get more information, the two best resources I could suggest everybody, O'Reilly has a book called Mastering Blockchain. I think it's by Lauren Lance and Daniel Cowrie. It's actually really good. It reads really well. The beginning is dry because it talks about the actual blocks in a blockchain and hashing. Troy alluded to that, but we didn't go down that nerd hole. But it really gives you a nice quick overview of things like blockchain, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana. What are NFTs? What are smart contracts? We talked about DAOs. It touches on those. So that's one thing I suggest if you're kind of just trying to get the academic understanding. I also echo Troy's sentiment before, the Gary Gensler class. I've flipped through a couple of those videos. They're pretty darn good. If you want to see what's really somebody who's got an interesting take on it from the technology facing side of it, there's a guy by the name of Packy McCormick who does notboring.co, I think is his website. He does a blog post once a week, usually on Mondays. I've learned more about blockchain technology from this guy than anybody else. And he approaches it in a very light and breezy way. So if you're really interested, sign up for his newsletter. I don't know Packy. I would love to have him on the show. So Packy, if you're listening, or if one of your fans are listening, get it to him. We'll have Troy and I'll have him on and pick his brain. But that's another resource where, in a fun, interesting way, he kind of looks at what Troy and I were just talking about, right? How does this bleeding edge technology tie into the world we've got today? But that's it. I go with what Troy said. If you want to hear more of this, let us know. If this was too far down the rabbit hole, let us know. If I totally butchered a definition, let us know. but if you have an idea and you want to get into the conversation, right? Just drop us a line in Discord and we'll take it from there, right? We're always looking. If you can solve my DAO problem for the Agile Uprising, we'll give you 5 governance tokens to start. Just reach out to me and let me know.
Yeah. And if you're listening at home, you're saying, well, what about this? What about that? Aren't there cons to this stuff? Sure. So if you want us to dive into that stuff, we'd be happy to. We could talk about pros and cons. We could deep dive in any topic you want. So the Agile Uprising Discord, we'll link it in the description. Feel free to join up. If you're already a member, you know where to post then. So, but check it out, and we will see you there.
Awesome. Thanks, Troy.
Thank you.